and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev.
Oh, it's another terrible week in the world, Ben.
Yeah, it rumbles on.
The world just gets a darker, more miserable place day by day, doesn't it, sometimes? And I know this isn't the place people come for this sort of thing, so we will try and lighten the mood a little bit. If we can bring a little bit of light relief amongst the just the most awful stuff happening in the world, then maybe we've done a little bit of good.
Yeah, although it doesn't seem like our country, the United Kingdom, is doing very well as far as humanitarian aid goes.
No.
I mean, like, if you have a quick glance, so take Poland, for example. I believe they've taken in about 885,000 refugees to date.
Yes.
Currently, we're at 50.
Mm.
That's not 50,000, that's 50.
Yes, 50.
It's pathetic. It makes you ashamed.
I mean, do you know what? There was, I don't know, I didn't see any of these myself, so I can't vouch for there being a lot around, but I don't live too far from the football ground for Crystal Palace.
Right.
And over the weekend, I saw on social media, someone had put, if you see any of these posters around Crystal Palace, please rip them down, because there were stickers with the sort of eagle on them and the Crystal Palace colours saying something like, refugees not welcome. And you just think, what is going on? This is a minority of people, right? I think most of the world would very happily see us hold out a very welcoming hand of help to people who desperately need it. But there are just a few people who seem to have such skewed morals and such skewed. I mean, there was an MP. Did you see the MP? Said last week from Lincolnshire or something. Typical toffee-nosed twat MP saying, well, I mean, I really feel that Lincolnshire has already done its bit when it comes to refugees, and I really don't think we haven't got room for any more.
Yes, and I believe didn't someone else on a slightly kinder note say, oh, well, I suppose they could come over here if they're willing to pick fruit for us.
Yes, I think that was a genuine policy idea.
I mean, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. I mean, the slimmest of silver linings about that Crystal Palace poster is that at least because no refugees have been allowed in, they won't be offended when they see it.
Yes, and I didn't see any of them, and I don't live too far from the ground, but maybe around the ground there might have been a few, but I just think it wouldn't have been many.
No, let's hope it was just one prat with a printer and some blue tack.
Some prick stick. So anyway, Ben, that's kind of where we're at in the world, and we just pray and hope that there's some sort of end to this and some peace, and people can live their lives without fearing walking in the street in Ukraine. But I fear we're in for a long haul.
Well, amen to that, and let's hope we're not.
But I'll tell you what else happened to me this week, Ben.
Go on.
It's a far more trivial thing.
Well, I think we need a bit of light relief.
Yeah, so I saw my friend this week and their little child. And you know what it's like when there's a little child around? You start perhaps singing the old nursery rhyme or a little song to ease any crying that might be going on.
Okay.
Now, when you were a kid, were there any favourite nursery rhymes that you used to enjoy that Ma Harmer would soothe your weary soul with?
I don't really remember being sang many nursery rhymes. No? I remember being read lots of books and things.
Right, so you were never really sung to?
I'm not saying I wasn't. I'm just saying that I don't remember particularly.
Right. I don't know why this came into my head to sing this to my friend's child this week. It might be because obviously there's a lot of army stuff in the news. But I started singing the song, do you remember Soldier, Soldier, Won't You Marry Me?
No.
Do you not remember that?
I remember Soldier, Soldier being a TV program that my mum used to like to watch, but
with Robson Green and the other one.
But I don't remember the nursery
called?
Rhyme.
What were they called? Robson and Jerome. Jerome Flynn. That was it. No, so it goes, oh, Soldier, Soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? Right. So it's a woman saying to the soldier, will you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? You've got your musket, you've got your fife, you've got your drum. Will you marry me?
Got it. Right. Okay.
And the soldier replies, oh, no, sweet maid, I cannot marry you, for I have no coat to put on. So
I haven't the coat to put on?
He hasn't got a coat. He's got his musket, fife and drum, but he's not got a coat. So anyway, I started singing this song. Now, I could only remember the first verse. So I just kept singing the first verse. And then I thought, well, I've got to look up what the rest is, because if I'm serenading this little girl, she's got to hear the whole story. There's no point in me just giving her, it's like I'm giving her a trailer for the whole thing. And I want her to leave my company thinking, oh, Uncle Trev has given me the whole story there. It's been a lovely experience. And I realised, what a dark tale this fairy tale is.
Really?
And what an arsehole the soldier is.
Right, well, so, I mean, it's a bit of a dick move to say I can't marry you because I don't have a coat.
Well, it goes on, right? So the first verse, right? So he says, oh, I can't marry you because I haven't got a coat. So she goes to her grandfather's chest and there's a coat in there. And it's one of the very, very best, Ben, right? And the soldier puts it on.
Okay. Is her grandfather still with us at this point of the story?
I'm guessing this is her grandfather's goods in a chest because, sadly, he's no longer around.
Well, he won't be for much longer. I mean, hypothermia, that'll get him. So without a coat.
So he's got his coat now, right? So she says, oh, soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? Right? Now he's got a coat as well. And then he says, oh, no, I can't marry you because I haven't got a hat. No, but you can't marry. So, I mean, he's finding all the excuses in the world to not marry this poor girl. He's madly in love with this soldier. Right.
Well, I think at this point, she should probably take the hint.
Well, she doesn't. She goes to her grandfather's chest and there's a hat in there and it's the very, very best, of course. And a soldier puts it on.
Right.
So she says, oh, soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? Guess what he says?
Musket, fife and drum, coat and hat now, yes?
Yeah. What do you think he says?
I'm assuming he says no.
He says no.
Because he's not got... Shoes?
Gloves.
Gloves.
He's got no gloves. I mean, this guy's an arsehole. Buy your own gloves. So guess where she goes?
I'm guessing her grandfather's chest.
Raiding that again.
Yeah.
All the heirlooms are going to this bastard. Gets him a pair. They're the very, very best, of course. Right? Puts them on. She then says, soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? Coat, hat and gloves. what do you think he says at this point?
I'm wondering what garment he might need
next. We're at verse four, and he's still...
Four.
She must be so blinded by love, because, I mean, surely at this point, she'd be going, fucking hell, mate. I mean, I've declared my undying love for you, and if it really comes down to just material goods, this isn't a marriage made in heaven.
Well, not only that, he keeps sending the poor cow back to the chest. Could he not have said in verse one, I need gloves, a hat...
Give her a list.
The coat, the whole list. So give it the one trip, not four.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's going to say no again, but I can't figure out what he's going to need now.
He says no, he needs boots now. I mean, he's a soldier. Surely that's one of the main bits of uniform for a soldier. I can understand maybe he ain't got a hat.
I mean, he should have been issued boots.
I mean, you'd have thought he'd be issued a hat, coat, gloves even. But
yeah.
Certainly boots. That would be number one in terms of military uniform, wouldn't it?
Right. So unless this guy hasn't got any trousers on, I'm assuming he's all out of excuses now.
Well, of course, she goes to her grandfather's chest, finds some boots, and of course, they are the very, very best, Ben, because her grandfather only had the very, very best, gives him the boots. So he puts them on. She says, soldier, will you now marry me with your musket, fife and drum, and all the other goods I've given you gratis? I mean, what's she say? We're on the final verse now. Final verse. So you're expecting, I'm assuming, a nice happy ending to this tale.
Well, nursery rhymes, some in particular, have a habit of being extremely brutal. But like I said, this guy must have run out of excuses by now. He is fully equipped.
Well, oh, soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drum? Oh, no, sweet maid, I cannot marry you. Bear in mind, he could have said this earlier on. In this whole scenario, he says, for I have a wife of my own. See, he's already married.
He's been leading her on.
And he's fleecing her for all the goods. And then it just ends. I think there should be like another verse where she just beats the living shit out of him, gets the goods back. Or grandfather, perhaps he's not dead. He comes out, he's raging. He wants his hat, gloves, boots and coat back.
I mean, after she brought him the coat, verse one, the next verse should have been her coming back to him and him saying, listen, love, I was trying to let you down gently. The truth is, I've got a wife who I love at home. I was just saying the shit about the coat just to be nice. I don't need just, I'm not interested.
But he's not a nice man, Ben. He's not a nice man because he's taken her through all of this bullshit to just basically say, well, no, it was never going to happen, but thanks very much for all the shit you've given
me. So what's the lesson we take home from this?
I have no idea. Don't trust soldiers. Don't trust men.
I don't think don't trust soldiers is the greatest message. I think maybe it's don't put your love in someone.
No.
I'm assuming it's more don't invest in someone you love who only asks for goods from you.
I don't know whether that's what they're trying to say. I don't know what they're trying to say. It suddenly dawned on me. I don't know what they're trying to say in this particular nursery rhyme.
The interesting thing is that, as you say, it is a nursery rhyme. Mm. So, I mean, it's a good lesson to teach sort of young, impressionable teens of both sex. You know, if someone appears to be showing you affection only in exchange for goods, then probably leave them alone and they're not that good for you. But to put that in nursery rhyme form, to pipe to babies and infants, why do they need to learn such a brutal lesson so early in life?
I don't know. And because you don't know it, see, my mum used to sing me that nursery rhyme when I was a kid, and it was one of my favourites. And it's got a very jaunty tune.
Mm.
Oh, soldier, won't you marry me with your musket, fife and drummer? Oh, no, sweet maid, I can't marry you, for I have no coat to put on that. La, 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 la. See, it's really like upbeat. And really, that tune doesn't match the dark shit that's going on.
No, that's true. I would say let them get a bit older and then maybe play them Kanye West Gold Digger.
That's the modern day equivalent.
Yeah.
So then I got then into a bit of a nursery rhyme fairy tale rabbit hole because I started to think of all the others. Because I know that some of them, fairy tales tend to have a darkness about them and other nursery rhymes. So, I mean, obviously.
Well, the classic, of course, being Ring a Ring of Roses being to do with the plague.
Yeah, I see. I don't know. I'm sure I saw once on QI that's not actually true, but that's what everyone says, isn't it? So I don't know if that is right or not.
Oh, so that would have been in the general ignorance round where everyone believes something to be true, which is absolutely rubbish.
Yes, I mean, I'm sure I saw that once, but that's what I would have said. If you'd said to me, oh, what's Ring a Ring of Roses about? Go, well, it's about the plague, isn't it?
Exactly. So you've been, how many of these have you been looking up?
Well, I've got quite a few. Oh, Jack and Jill. Now, Jack and Jill, right? So on the face of it, it's a very lovely story. Jack and Jill, they go up the hill
to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown and Jill came tumbling after, if I'm not very much mistaken.
Yeah. And then doesn't she just wrap it in vinegar paper? I mean, he basically, he falls down a hill and smashes his fucking skull in. And then she's wrapping it up with vinegar and brown paper. That's not, he needs hospital attention. The kid has fallen. It's a long way. He's cracked his head out. He's broken his crown, Ben. That's like, he's skulls that doesn't mean, too.
No, yeah, that doesn't mean, for those who think he might have been a royal, it doesn't mean he's broken his sort of, the sort of crown that sits on top of his head, you know, bejeweled in all its loveliness. No, that means the crown of his skull.
Although,
he's caved it in.
Although, when I looked up about this, I never knew this about it, that some people have interpreted this rhyme as being based on King Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette. So it could have been a crown. And of course, they were beheaded during the French Revolution.
Isn't it supposed to be that Jack and Jill were having some sort of lurid affair?
I thought they were.
They were sneaking off up the hill, you know, for some fun time.
I thought they were like kids, Ben. I didn't realise that like Jack and Jill were grown-ups.
It's taken a whole new sinister tone now, hasn't it?
What, so they were going up the hill for a bit of old How's Your Father?
Yeah, not just to fetch a pail of water.
Well, to be honest then, Jack should have been paying more attention to the incline of the hill and not Jill's behind.
Well, maybe he should have been, but I think all the blood had rushed from his head.
Didn't matter then if he smashed it on the way down. Very little damage down. Well, another one I looked at, Mary, Mary, quite contrary. How does your garden grow?
Indeed.
Right, how does the next line go there?
I honestly don't know. I think that's probably the extent of my knowledge of that nursery rhyme.
How does your garden grow with silver bells and cockle shells and pretty maids all in a row? Now, again, that all sounds very lovely, doesn't it? You've got silver bells and you've got cockle shells and pretty maids all in a row.
But then are they all in a row?
Well, then you start looking up about, and my God, did you just think, what is going on here?
Oh, God, the maids aren't buried in the garden, are they? Well, all in a row.
Well, it would. I don't know. Basically, the silver bells, cockle shells, and pretty maids are all supposedly torture tools. So you're telling me this nursery rhyme is basically about Mary Mary. She's quite contrary because she's torturing the hell out of everyone who comes anywhere near her fucking garden.
Oh, I thought she might have been some psychopathic, jealous, spurned lover who's been burying all his man's new wives and girlfriends in the garden in a row.
It's supposed to be based on Bloody Mary, who was notorious for torturing Protestants in the 16th century.
Okay.
So Mary Mary is Bloody Mary. And if any Protestant comes near a garden, they get the silver bells, whatever they are. I'm imagining they are pretty brutal.
I'm going to look into what silver bells are in relation to torture.
What's a torture thing?
Yeah.
I've got a feeling that they're going to attach to a bit of the body that doesn't need things attached to it, isn't it?
Yes. And
cockle shells. Let's not even think what they might be.
Good grief.
Have you found them? Have you found what silver bells are?
Oh, my God. I think I've seen these things before TV.
This sounds horrendous. Like, Mary, Mary, quite contrary. Again, like, it's a very sweet-sounding thing, isn't it? But go on. What is a silver bell?
Well, silver bells are believed to be, like, thumb screws, essentially.
Right.
And cockle shells are believed to be instruments of torture attached to the genitals.
I knew that there'd be something that attaches there.
Yeah, they were obsessed with the genitals, weren't they, olden times people? And it seems to be, oh my God, if you can imagine think of a closed tulip flower.
Right.
And then you would insert that.
Oh no.
Into God knows where. And then you could crank it the other end and the petals of the flower would open up.
Oh, my God.
Wider and wider and wider. So it's until the sort of flower has completely extended and harvested and everything surrounding it wider and wider open.
Oh, my good God.
I feel a bit bilious all of a sudden.
There's no need for that. Do you know what? I'd rather be flayed alive than them sticking that up. God knows where. Well, it's not God knows where. We all know where it's going, don't we? Don't need it. Have you found out what pretty maids are? Is that a torture thing?
I will have a look for you.
Or are pretty maids the ones who have been tortured?
Well, maybe that was why they were lying in a row. Maybe she has offed with them and they're lying in the garden dead.
Or she's just got them in a row. They're queuing up for the silver bells and cockle shells.
Well, according to one article I found on the internet, the pretty maids in a row stood for the people lining up to be executed by the Halifax gibbet, which is the same as a guillotine.
Okay, so she's got the old cockle shell for shoving it up. She's got the silver bells for, what was that, thumb screws?
Yes.
And then if she can't get information out of you from those things, you go straight to the pretty maid.
The old Halifax gibbet.
Jesus Christ, mate. These are supposed to be... We're singing these to children.
Well, at least I suppose the plus side is, although they have a very dark undercurrent to them, at least the kids don't know that, do they?
No, thank God.
It's a bit like watching an episode of The Simpsons. It's sort of layered, so that there are jokes for the adults, and there are jokes for the kids.
Give you a couple of other things here that, again, not necessarily sinister, but when you think about it, it's weird. There was an old lady who swallowed a fly. Now, there's nothing sinister, really, except, of course, in the end, she dies because she tries to swallow a horse.
Yeah, she ends up trying to swallow the entire zoo to try and take care of a simple fly.
Now, when you think about this song, again, when you talk about what lessons is this trying to teach children, what is the lesson here? If you swallow a fly, don't go down the old lady route. Because most people in my life that I've met wouldn't consider going on the next bit of the journey. I've swallowed a fly, shit, I'd now better find a spider, then a bird, then a cat and a dog. Is it then a cow? What comes after the dog? Is it a cow?
I must admit, I haven't got this one memorised.
Oh, it was a goat to catch the dog.
Why do goats catch dogs?
That doesn't make any sense, is it?
Mind you, why am I trying to put reason to this ludicrous rhyme?
And then the horse to eat the goat.
Again, horses aren't known for catching goats or eating goats.
And actually, wouldn't it be easier to have eaten a lion or a tiger? That's more likely to eat the goat. Isn't it?
Well, yes, something carnivorous, yeah.
A horse isn't going to look at a goat and think, oh, well, there's dinner, whereas a whereas a big cat would do that. And if you're swallowing all the animals in one go, you could probably take on a dangerous big lion or tiger.
You wonder how a woman capable of swallowing a a horse would even have noticed the fly to begin with.
Well, no, because, I mean, obviously it's every time she's eaten it, then surely her oral gape has has increased. Do you know what I mean? So, because she would have had to stretch some to even put the cat in. I mean, fly, spider, and bird. I reckon I could have a go on those three.
I could do a fly and a spider without increasing, to use your awful phrase, my oral gape. But I think I'd struggle to swallow a bird whole.
Well, it depends on what sort of bird you got. I mean, imagine like a little wren.
It'd have to be bloody small.
Well, a wren is a tiny bird, isn't it? Or a hummingbird. You know,
no, that's quite big. I think how narrow your throat is. I know people who have choked on coins.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting you take on like an ostrich or something like that. I'm just thinking like a small bird. But then beyond that, I think cat, I don't think I could take a cat down. But then if I have chosen a bigger bird, then maybe I've stretched the oral gape enough to take in the cat.
Maybe. Maybe.
Makes you think, though, doesn't it? Makes you think.
It does, for a minute, yes. I don't think I'll ever forget the words oral gape.
Rock-a-bye baby, do you remember that one?
Rock-a-bye baby on the treetop.
Yeah.
Then the bough breaks, the baby will fall, something, yeah. Something, something.
Yeah, so you've put your baby up in a tree, so already there's neglect going on in the story.
Someone call social services.
Yeah. You climbed a tree and just left your baby on a very flimsy twig. Essentially, the wind blows. Oh, it's all come down, baby and all. The whole thing stinks of child neglect.
It does.
Esther Ranson would have been on the phone like a shot.
There's a reference that's going to really split the audience. Trevor had an uncomfortable problem to deal with at work.
Okay. Did it involve a cockle shell?
No cockle shells, thank goodness. Basically, I was approached by a colleague, and I start later than most people because I've got an evening bit to my job, which most people don't. So I didn't know who this guy was. I recognised his face, and he said to me, "Oh, do you empty that post box this evening outside the pub down the road?"
Right.
I said, "Yeah, I do." He said, "Ah, I hate to tell you this, but we've basically just seen a little old man put some dog shit in there."
Oh, what is wrong with people? Who's putting dog shit in the postbox?
So I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, sorry." And he was trying not to giggle.
Right.
So there was a part of me that thought, is this a wind-up? And then I thought, no, it's not. There is nothing to gain, because they're not going to get to see me try and open it. There's nothing to gain from this being a wind-up.
Well, unless they're filming it. There's hidden cameras everywhere. Have you checked on YouTube, mate?
But no, because basically I went straight to my manager and I said, "Listen, I have it on good authority that a little old man has put dog shit into this box that I've got to go and collect later on."
Did you not put your nose to the little flat bit and just sort of, "Yeah, I reckon it is in there."
And my manager said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "I didn't witness it, but like I say, I have it on very good authority."
The thing is, you say good authority, it's just someone in the street.
No, it was a colleague who witnessed it happen.
Oh, a colleague.
A colleague witnessed it happen. What right. Did you think I said? A collie? Well, a dog.
Yeah, it's like, was the dog posting its own shit? Maybe it's a very well-trained dog, actually. It's better to do it in there than... Because those pooper scoop bag bins in parks do look like mailboxes.
Well, that was the issue, right? Was it an act of malice? Was it some old bastard who hates the postal service and thought, "I'll show him," and he posted a load of dog shit? Or was it, bless him, maybe a slightly confused old man who, as you say, confused the dog shit bin for the post box?
Because the question I have is, because when you're telling me this story, my initial thought is someone has just posted the dog shit through, not bagged up, just picked it up and put it through. But if it's a mistake, I can imagine it being bagged up in a proper dog poop bag.
Yes, that would be a good indicator as whether or not it was malicious.
Yes.
But then again, he would need a glove, wouldn't he?
A glove?
Otherwise, he's the victim of his own crime. If he's scooping up dog shit with his bare hands, then he's also getting the sting of the the jibe, isn't he? If he's getting dog shit on his hands to get dog shit on my hands.
Well, maybe the maid hasn't gone to her grandfather's chest yet and given love. But no, those... No, but I see people in the streets, they just use the bag, don't they? They sort of put the bag over their hand.
Oh, and don't seal it and dump it in. I see what you mean.
Pick it up and sort of turn it inside out. So glove isn't necessarily needed for this act.
I see what you mean. Okay. So I went there and I said, listen, I'm not emptying that box.
Oh, you're standing up here, aren't you? Standing up for yourself.
Well, listen, I do get paid shit money, but I don't get paid shit money. I don't get paid enough to deal with that, which I basically told my manager in no uncertain terms. I said, I'm not paid enough to deal with that. Above my pay grade, find someone else to deal with that. I'm not touching it. And he looked at me for a minute and went, yeah, fair enough, I will. So he had to call someone in. And the end of the day rolled around. I don't know.
Because you've got people on speed dial to deal with dog shit.
Well, imagine if that's your job at the Royal Mail, is to, you know, be on standby for scooping dog shit out.
I can't believe the Royal Mail have got someone on staff who just cover that area of work.
So anyway, this lingered on for a few days, and I kept sort of saying, has it been sorted out yet? And the answer was, oh, I don't know. I did ask someone to do it, but I don't know yet. And this carried on for a few days, and then eventually it got to the point where I said, listen, this is building up. We haven't told the public to stop putting mail in.
And that bloke might still be putting more dog shit through.
Yeah.
If he thinks that's the place to put it, there's 3 or 4 days of it going in.
So I didn't collect this box for the best part of a week. And as far as I know, it may have just built up and up. I don't know what happened. Eventually, I got a text from my manager, which might be the best professional text I've ever received, saying simply, there was no poo in the box.
Wow. Well,
which was a real letdown, really, but the single greatest text I've ever had from a boss. So I basically confronted, sounds a bit grand. I basically went up and talked to the guy and he said, mate, I don't know what happened since. He definitely put shit in that box.
I wouldn't trust this man as far as I can throw him. I reckon he saw you coming and thought, I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell him there's dog shit. And I don't know what he would have got out of it, but I just don't believe this happens, Ben.
No, I mean, it didn't bother me really because I refused to deal with it. And it meant I didn't have to collect from that box for a whole week, which was great.
But no one got any posts. Anyone who posted anything important in that letterbox, doesn't matter.
I did suggest that we maybe cover it up or put a sign on it or something, but I thought the last thing I'm going to do, in case it was an act of malice, the last thing I'm going to do is put a sign on it saying this is not for dog excrement, because then it'll be filled with it.
Yes, yeah, you know, that's people true. Like. You don't want to start inviting that into the post box.
And also it was outside a pub, which meant it could have been someone who was a bit pissed up or people coming out of the pub pissed since then see the sign and think it's funnier and an invitation, because people put rubbish in post boxes all the time.
And if it's outside a pub, you get pissed people coming outside the pub, they'll start putting their own in.
Yeah, of course they will. Of course they will. And eventually this got me thinking, and I started asking some of my colleagues, what are some of the stranger things you've discovered when emptying post boxes?
Right.
And I got 3 answers from them.
Go on.
From 3 different colleagues. One of them was Viagra.
What, just so not in an envelope or anything? Just someone's posted just a box of Viagra.
Yeah, I'm assuming some of it had been used and the other half, for whatever reason, had been posted.
Okay.
I don't know why. People do tend to use it as a sort of, like a sin bin. Like the more disgusting things in life that they're too ashamed to put in a normal bin. Right. Go in the post box.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure which of the last two are worse. A friend of mine, when I told him the dog shit story, he said, oh yeah, last week I had to fish out a used condom.
Oh no, don't.
And I said, you didn't touch that with your bare hands, did you? And he said, oh no, fuck that. I flicked it out with, I sort of picked it up with a letter and sort of flung it to one side.
Oh, you picked it up with someone's letter?
Yeah, I thought someone's going to get that letter posted to them. And pick it up and God knows what's going to be on it.
Oh.
And I asked another colleague.
I'm going to check every letter I get through the door with one of those ultraviolet lights now.
Well, it makes you think twice about ever licking the envelope and sending back a self-addressed envelope, wouldn't it, to anyone who sent you anything in the post?
Yeah.
And the other one a colleague told me was he fished out a pair of knickers that had been shamefully posted into a box he was emptying.
Mm.
And I sort of, ooh, was it like a... naughty little G-string
was
or
it
something?
In the same postbox as the other items? Because there's a story. A story building here.
A rather sad and tragic story. No, he said it wasn't like sexy lingerie, so you couldn't even imagine something a bit sexy had happened and a bit raunchy. No, he said it was unattractive, like in
big old bloomers.
Yeah, he said to me, and I'll never forget, size large, condition used.
Now, Ben, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about hobbies? I've got a feeling it all came about because of the owl pellet. So let's not try and bring them up too often, but the old owl pellets got us talking about weird hobbies, didn't
yes,
it?
Yeah.
We talked about collecting, and you were quite scathing about the idea of collecting things.
Yeah, I think it was because it was a specific thing I had a problem with. I can't remember quite what it was now. It was samurai swords from memory, was it not?
Oh, that's right. It was samurai swords. And you thought, well, what's the point of collecting these things?
Well, it's just a case of you get it, it's on the wall, hobby over. It's not like a thing you work at, is it? You just get it, stick it on the wall, done.
Well, Dave, one of our regular listeners, got in touch with me this week. He said, try out some of these collections on Ben, as he didn't seem too keen on collecting anything.
Okay.
So he sent me some of the weirdest collections that people have. There's a lady who's 83, Yvette Darden. She has collected, I mean, I don't know where you store this, 60,000 vintage tins. So things now, like, you know, chocolate tins, you know, biscuit tins, 60,000 she's got.
For what purpose?
To collect them.
Yeah, I suppose that's where I'm falling down here. Does a collection need to be worth anything?
Not necessarily, but it might be. The thing about collections is it probably becomes more valuable over time. She's been collecting for 30 years. Some of those tins, probably quite rare, probably quite valuable.
Well, that's great. If she leaves behind something that's rare and valuable and her inheritance can go to someone and they can get a few thousand pounds out of a really rare tin or whatever, I can't imagine why on earth that would be worth anything, then great. But ultimately, what she's leaving behind when she shuffles off this mortal coil is a burden for someone who's got to find a way of getting rid of 30,000 tins.
60,000.
60,000.
60,000 tins.
Jesus Christ.
The thing is, if you were left those in someone's will, you might...
Straight in the bin. Straight in the bin.
Well, 60,000, I'd hope you'd recycle that number, because the amount of metal that would be available for recycling there, Ben, just to throw them in the bin would be outrageous.
Well, depending on how much time you've got between her sad passing and the funeral...
You could turn it into a coffin.
You could turn it into one final tin.
Yes.
That would be a great way to send her off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you could. I reckon you could make a decent coffin with that. And
melt it all down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just some sort of great big tin with a sort of sealable lid that you can close on top.
Yes, yeah.
And then give her the send-off she would have obviously wanted.
And there might even be enough left for some sort of metal headstone created. Okay, so you're not into the tins. I'll try this one on you.
No, I mean, again, each to their own. If that's what makes you happy in life, then fill your boots. I just don't see it myself, really.
Air sick bags.
So every time you take a flight, you collect the sick bag.
Yes, you put them. They're known as baggists, the people who collect these.
There's a name for these people. Yeah. There's more than one.
And there's an online virtual museum for air sickness bags. You can go on and have a look at all the different ones. One man who's been collecting for years has got over 6,000 of them from 200 countries. One of his bags has even been in space. It's a NASA space shuttle bath bag. I mean, I wouldn't mind one of those. I'd have a NASA bath bag.
Yeah, I mean, that must be the crown jewel of the collection, the NASA one.
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. That would be the one you would covet, wouldn't it? Do you know, like when you had like the Panini sticker albums and your mates at school, you go, got, swap. and if someone had that last shiny silvery one that you didn't have, that was like the jewel in the crown. You go, yeah, let me swap for that one. And if you were collecting bath bags and somebody went, got, oh, it's the NASA one, I haven't got that, and you've got two, that would be the most amazing moment of that collector's life, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the NASA bath bag is definitely the number one shiny in the Panini. Can we call it the sicker book?
The sicker book. then some people's collections are a little bit weird. I mean, like, I'm being quite defensive of people who collect here, Ben, but I think some people cross a line. Celebrity hair.
Well, now, if I have to play devil's advocate, why is that any more weird than tins or bath bags?
I don't know. There's just something about having someone's sort of
DNA,
part of their body in the house. I mean, one man, he's a Guinness World Record holder. I mean, he's got a bit of Elvis Presley's hair. So that's all worth money, isn't it?
Does he, though?
He has it, $15,000 that's available for. It's authenticated. Also got a bit of Michael Jackson's hair. $2,000 that was.
Yeah, I mean, who authenticates this?
I don't know.
Was there someone there at the presence of the snipping? It just seems rife for abuse, this.
Well, no, there must be somebody that has to authenticate it, and maybe they do some sort of DNA on it. I don't know.
I doubt that very much.
I mean, he's got others in his collection. I don't know how these would be authenticated. Albert Einstein, Napoleon Bonaparte, Abraham Lincoln, Ava Braun. He ain't got Ava Braun's hair. Ludwig van Beethoven and Marilyn Monroe.
That is quite the collection.
It is quite. I mean,
see, why am I? See, I'm vaguely impressed by this one. You
are, aren't you?
Be honest. You'd rather have that than the 60,000 tins, wouldn't you?
It would take up less space.
It would take up a hell of a lot less space. And I think people in general would be not that you should collect things to impress people, of course. But I think you'd get more people wanting to know more if you said I collect celebrity hairs and I've got Elvis, I've got Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Then if you say, I've got 60,000 tins.
But wouldn't it be weird if you invited someone around your house and you just got out people's hair? Would you, like, if you bring someone around your house, you can quickly show them your room full of tins. But if you've got, like, a little book and you open it up and there's just bits of people's hair, I think if I was in someone's house and they did that, I think I'd want to leave quite quickly.
I think hair is slightly more interesting than an autograph, though, isn't it? Just a squiggle on a page.
Yeah, I suppose so. Now, if we ever do get to the point like Jurassic Park, we could bring back Beethoven, for example.
Yeah, could do.
I mean, I always thought Beethoven wore a wig. So, I mean, in those days, they all wore like those weird wigs, didn't they?
I suppose so, yeah.
But, I mean, he must have had hair underneath that, but you don't think of him having his own hair. All right, so hair you might think, all right, what about nails?
What, like fingernails, toenails?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems less hygienic than hair to me. I don't like that.
I think this is someone who just collects their own nails.
That's even weirder.
Is it?
I collect my own body parts. Yes, that's strange.
Okay.
It's quite self-important as well.
Yeah.
Don't you think? If I had a jar of celebrity toenails.
Yes.
You'd be ever so slightly more intrigued than that if I presented you with a jar of my toenail clippings, wouldn't you?
But I'd hope if you had celebrities' toenails, you wouldn't just put them all in one jar, because then you'd lose track of whose is whose, wouldn't you? You'd have to have a jar for each.
Yeah, I'm not mad.
For each celebrity's clippings, you'd have to have its own separate showcase.
Yes, yeah. Petri dish.
A little Petri dish, that would be the way to display them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and then you could reveal to people who was the cleanest of the celebrities and who was the most disgusting.
Yeah. I tell you the way I'd have them done, actually. This is, if I was to get into the business of collecting celebrities' toenails, I'd have them embedded in like a block of resin. And so that they're floating in like a little, like I'd have a cube of resin and the toenails would be sort of floating in the middle of that. I think that would be a great way of displaying them. You could have them on the shelf with, you'd even have their name sort of engraved on the resin.
Yes.
That would be the way to display them. I think a Petri dish is almost too medical the more I think about it. I'll give you a couple more here. Fossilised feces. I've told you before that I bought some fossilised dinosaur feces for my godson a couple of years ago. It didn't seem to inspire him enough to start a collection.
I think it's a good, I don't think it's a good hobby to actually do. I think it's a good hobby to claim you do if you want to get rid of people in your life.
Right, yeah. things that could backfire if you started to see, let's say someone you work with who just is really annoying, and you said to them, by the way, I like to collect fossilized feces to try and get rid of them. What if they went, oh, so do I. Let's compare collections. Then you've either got to go and buy some very quickly, or come clean and say, well, actually, I was making it up because I wanted to get rid of you.
Or you say, absolutely not. I don't deal with rivals. Get out of my life.
Right, yeah. Okay, here's another couple for you. I reckon you'd go for this one. Hot sauce. Vic Klinko has got 10,000 bottles of the stuff.
I like the idea of having a selection of hot sauces, and I think that's because I like the YouTube show Hot Ones.
Right.
Where celebrities are interviewed whilst they eat increasingly spicy hot wings.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I quite like to have the lineup of hot sauces from the show Hot Ones, but they change every series or every season, so it's different all the time. But I would like them, but only to use them. They're useless kept on a shelf.
Yeah, and they go off eventually, right? So
of course they do, like everything, yeah.
They have all this rancid stuff in bottles, so in future generations can't do anything with it. If you've got 10,000 bottles of hot sauce, again, when you shuffle off this mortal coil, nobody can do anything with that stuff.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you weren't applying that same logic to the 60,000 empty tins.
No, you're right. I reckon though, what you could do with the hot sauce is, could you almost smother the body in that? Because it would probably break the body down quite, it would almost be like acid on the body. It could be a great way of disposing of a body.
Like the end of Terminator 2.
I've never seen Terminator 2.
I think someone might come in and correct me now. I might have got my sequels mixed up. I think it's the end of Terminator 2, where he's slowly lowered into lava and disintegrates.
Yeah. Or like in Breaking Bad, where they have like the bath full of acid.
Exactly.
We just put the body in the bath and cover it in hot sauce. And if all goes to plan, barbecue it. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Just before we go, got a couple of recommendations for you. First of all, on Netflix, I might have come a little bit late for this, but The Tinder Swindler.
I've heard of this.
Oh, it's an incredible tale. It's I don't want to give too much away because it's just an amazing story that unfolds before your eyes, but it leaves you angry, it leaves you dissatisfied to some degree, but it's just the most amazing story. And the other thing I want to recommend, which is on, I think I'm very new to all this, but I'm finding now that there's too many things. I'm of an age where there's just too many of them. There's a thing called Peacock.
Okay.
Which I've discovered is available through my Sky thing. But they've got a thing called Joe versus Carol, which is a sort of comedy dramatisation about Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin's battles.
Of Tiger King fame. Oh, that yes. Sounds fun.
Yeah, no, it is good. I mean, the CGI of the animals leaves a little bit to be desired. If you can get past that... they must have sort of got a student to do that, because some of it's like really poor. And I looked up some of the reviews of the show, and there's a lot of disdain for the CGI animals, but it didn't spoil it for me. Even some people say, I couldn't watch it because of that, but it didn't spoil it for me. I'm about halfway through, so it's on Peacock, whatever that is, if you can find that. It's well worth a watch.
Good stuff. I'm going to recommend, it's going to be a blind recommendation based on how much I love the actor and comedian Will Sasso.
Oh, okay.
He basically is he's known for a lot of things, but he's also done one of my favourite podcasts in the past, the 10-minute podcast. It won't be for everyone. It's very silly. I adore it. And after years of absence, he is starting a new podcast venture with Chad Culchin, who appeared on the 10-minute podcast towards the latter years with him.
Right.
It's a thing called Dudesy.
Dudesy.
It's all a bit cryptic at the moment as to what it's about. Something to do with AI and podcasting. It sounds very intriguing, but if Will Sasso's got his name on it and Chad Culchin's got his name on it, I'm going to say it's definitely going to be worth a listen whenever Series 1 drops anytime soon. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Trevor, is, are you a fan of Andrew Marr?
I am a fan of Andrew Marr, yes.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that this evening, as of recording, he started a brand new show on LBC at 6 p.m.
Oh, of course, yes.
And it's been the most hysterical thing to listen to them try and advertise, because they've called it Tonight with Andrew Marr. So, because it only started tonight, for the past week they've been going, and Tonight with Andrew Marr, coming to LBC next week, not tonight, but Tonight with Andrew... not tonight, next week from Monday. Tonight with not actually. The show is called Tonight. They've been tying themselves in knots with it all week. It's been really fun.
Didn't think that one through, did they? Really?
It's like calling a show Up Next. It's just so stupid.
Also, while we're just doing blind recommendations, I haven't watched it yet, but Channel 4 have started to show Servant of the People.
Oh!
Starring, of course, Volodymyr Zelensky.
Brilliant. I'll definitely give that a look. Is it, I'm assuming it's, is it translated, is it subtitled or dubbed?
I'm guessing it's subtitled.
Okay.
It started on Sunday night on Channel 4. I think they showed the first three then, so I'm guessing over the next few weeks they're going to show the lot, but I've just put it on series record. I just thought, do you know, I probably wouldn't have bothered, but the man is proving to be such a hero that I'd quite like to see it.
Well, I've been looking for my tiny little ways of which I can show my support to the people of Ukraine. I think maybe adding to the UK viewing figures of that show might be a tiny, tiny way of doing that.
Yeah, well, if we can all just do a little bit to show our support, then that's all we can do, I think, at this stage, Ben.
Excellent, I agree.
So there we are, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.